Namaste and welcome. I guess this is the Christmas edition. This is Christmas is in the middle of next week. Although I didn't really prepare a Christmas message. As you can see, I don't even have a tree up. I mean, nothing. I have no time. Just been too busy. No time for Christmas. But anyway, it's nice to see you all here. Everyone that's made it. And those that are not here, we'll see them next time. Ah, there he is now. Yeah. That would be Primadas, yes. Can we put this on hold for a second till we... So anyway, again, it's good to have you all here. Looks like we have a very short... We might have a short day today, but I did bring a film which we might watch today since we've got very limited questions here in the satsang bowl unless something comes up. I did go over the other day and bought a tape of Muktananda. So you'll get to see Muktananda. Perhaps today we'll watch one of his satsangs. And you can see basically what's the same, what's different. You missed last time. We had the marathon satsang. We had tapes Nisargadatta and Punjaji speaking. So you could just kind of see the difference in gurus. You can get those on, most of those are on VHS. You can get them at East West Bookstore on Roosevelt if you're interested in seeing how different gurus are. in looking at the tapes, I'm very much more similar to Nisargadatta than I am Punjaji, and very much more similar to Muktananda. So... It's just interesting to see different gurus and how they relate and how they speak and what's given. But Muktananda is basically the same path as this. It's a Kundalini path, Kashmiri Shaivite path. So you should see a lot of similarities. It's a path to the Advaita, to non-duality. I had a guy today on the Kundalini site. I don't know if you've seen the thing. He applied for membership and was saying, oh, I'm now doing Kundalini practice, but I want to avoid the Kundalini syndrome, so what do I do? I said, stop doing any practice. You know, if you're already in fear about going through a Kundalini journey, why are you doing this practice? You know? So sometimes you just have to laugh, you know, at some people when they come, you know. They're in fear, yet they're chasing after something, but they don't want to have any, I don't want to have any negatives, I want to have only positives, and because they really don't understand what the Kundalini journey's about. It's about bringing up all this stuff to be looked at and to let go of it. But they don't want to see anything. They only want to gather and collect cities and all these other things that they hear about. So they really have no idea of what the path is about. So that was interesting. So on we go. We go to the... Satsang Bowl. Do you have any questions for the Satsang Bowl today? Maybe you can think of some. Well, don't strain yourself. Don't kill yourself. You don't have to, you know. if you have something that's a burning, pressing question, yeah. Burning, pressing. But zonk nothing, then don't worry about it. What is Kali Yuga? And did Jesus refer to reincarnation? Okay. They say Kali Yuga is the Iron Age. It's the hard age. It's the one that's the furthest away from being naturally in an enlightened state. It's the dark ages, if you will. What's not happening now? It's transitioning out of Kali Yuga now. It's transitioning out of Kali Yuga. People are now starting to have more and more people awakening. So we're now going back over to Satyug. Satyug is where people are enlightened. So people are coming now more out of the industrial, out of more the materialistic, and they're starting to have more people starting to awaken. So, yeah, we're transitioning out of Kali Yuga now.
Is that the first time for this planet?
Is that the first time? I can't say. So it's the first time from this planet. Don't forget the microphone. It just goes through different cycles. As with everything else, you go through one cycle and another cycle and another cycle. But, yeah, it's transitioning out. More and more and more people are having awakenings, having opportunities presented for awakenings. The other half of this, did Jesus refer to reincarnation? Well, yeah, the Bible itself, Christ was asking at one point, who do you think I am, you know? And they had said, you know, that they were expecting, like, what was it, John, St. John the Baptist. They said, well, so-and-so is going to come before. So, yeah, yeah, right. They were expecting it. They were expecting this reincarnation to come. They were expecting it. So it was a quite accepted thing. Back in biblical times, there was nothing against reincarnation back then. We need to do the mic.
I don't know if it's important or not, but I heard that people thought that John the Baptist was the reincarnation of Elijah.
Right. They thought he was a reincarnated being, that he had gone and he'd come and he'd come back and continued on with what he needed to do. Absolutely. So, yeah, it was very accepted during those times of reincarnation. It was only when they tried to re-update the Bible and the biblical things that they started to try to take reincarnation out and say, well, you need to accept Christ, you need to accept it now, or you're going to be in hellfire, damnation forever, all eternity. That only changed when they brought the Bible, you know, into a collected series of works, so to speak. But in the beginning Judaism, that was not the case. It's only with the advent of, what was his name, Constantine, and the Bible, that this, they tried to change the doctrine concerning, yeah.
Yeah.
In Constantinople, yeah. So, yeah, so they tried to, you know, bring in different dogma that you have to do it and you have to do it now as a way to, you know, it's another way of controlling, you know. You need the priests. You need to have it, and you need to have it now. So, yeah.
I think that's a really interesting question. This is a really interesting question because we're so surrounded by Christians, and it seems to me the entire New Age, the born-again Christian movement is all built around, you know, all that's real is what is in the Bible, you know.
Yeah.
And they are totally unwilling to consider, and it says in Revelations in the end that anybody who adds one word or changes one word of the Bible is going to go to hell and damnation forever. And so they're pounding everybody over the head with this Bible that they don't understand was created in Constantinople in 3 AD and doesn't include all of the books.
Right, right. And there have been so many translations of the Bible. So The word has been changed. It's been changed over and over. They sit there and debate what it means. And each translation has a little different spin on it. So, you know, they don't address these things. For them, it's very black and white.
Totally. I've spent much of my life studying the Essene manuscripts, mm-hmm. which, of course, were the basis of Judaism and Christianity. And totally in line with the teachings that you and other swamis are putting forth. I mean, there's really no discrepancies or any conflict. The only conflict comes when you get these people who are so stuck on this Bible that was created in 380.
Right, right. Unfortunately, they don't really understand what Christ's message and what he was doing when he was here. And instead of taking the message and where he was pointing to, that liberation is now, and I'm here to show you that liberation is now, they've taken and put him up on a pedestal and made him, instead of the message he was trying to bring, they transferred it onto a persona. No, you don't have to do what he said, you only have to believe on him. You know, that's much easier than actually having to put it into practice. Hmm.
It really is one of our challenges, though, because I just kind of avoid Christians now. And I got involved with the church for a while and found that they're very devout and they believe, and I can participate in that part, but they're so black and white and so...
It's all fear-based.
It is.
Unfortunately, you know, Christ was all about love. Against love, there is no law. I haven't come to change. I've come to complete. Against love, there is no law. But they're all about hell and damnation, and they're going to condemn everyone else. And, you know, they haven't even found the basic message that Christ was here to give. What I am, you are. Basically, he said the same thing. What I am, you are. What I have done, you can do, and even more so. Well, if he was the highest, then how could you do that, and even more so what he could do? It's very sad that the Christian church does not understand what they've been given. I mean, even if you look in the Bible, and they had the one that was the really devout Jew, and they had the Samaritan, who was it that was honored? It was the Samaritan. He was the one that was taking care of this man that had been beaten up. He paid the way. He put him in the inn. He took care of him. And he was a dreaded, oh my God, a Samaritan. But they held him up as the paragon of virtue, not the Jew, not the one that was, you know, supposedly of the chosen race. So same thing. They're missing the point. They're missing what was being given over and over and over again. It had nothing to do with your religious affiliations. It had to do, and it says also in the Bible, what is judged is your heart and your mind. What is that content? Where are you coming from? Where is your consciousness? It's not because you're, quote-unquote, a Christian or, quote-unquote, a Buddhist, you know, or, quote-unquote, a Hindu. It doesn't matter. What matters is what is inside your heart and your mind, your consciousness.
And I think they do so much hell by, I mean, so much damage by labeling anybody who doesn't follow their strict, narrow beliefs as condemned and as evil. You know, they would look at you as somebody to be afraid of.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so avoidance seems like the only way to deal with them.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not open to hearing anything. And so fine, leave them where they're at. Let them find what happiness they have. I mean, if they can surrender 100% in their religion, and this is what it's all about, is surrender. If they can absolutely trust Christ. It doesn't matter who, if it's Christ or if it's Guru, if they can absolutely trust them 100%, then they will find liberation eventually. The whole path is about trust and surrender. This is why so many of the saints had Kundalini awakenings, because it was an internal search. And they had faith and they had trust and they were absolutely surrendered in their path. And they had Kundalini awakenings. So many of these Catholic saints, because they were on the path of the mystic, the internal search. And none of them would have been condemning anyone, because you can't. Once you reach realization, it's impossible to condemn anyone. And you understand where all of the religions are pointing to. What is the direction? There's only one God, one essence. And it doesn't matter what way it's being presented. God is not limited to one identification or one way. It has that truth that runs like a thread through all religions if you get rid of the dogma. The externalized path, the only difference in it is the scenery along the way, but it takes you to the same end. There's only one. You can only get to one end. There's only one essence, which is termed God. That's it. So it doesn't matter what path you follow, which way you go, what scenery you look at the end, God is formless. It's not a persona. It simply is. And it's the basis for all that comes into the world. It makes possible all that comes into the world. It makes possible the fact that you can have knowledge and you can learn and you can have all of these things. But it's not contained in any one religion.
I think what they get stuck on is, it says in the Bible, and who knows if this is really what Christ said, that I am the way, the truth, and the light, and no one shall enter the kingdom of heaven except by me.
Mm-hmm. By me as the way, the truth, and the life. Basically, any guru says that. I'm the way, the truth, and the life.
Not the only way.
Right. Not the only way. If you look at my life, you will find the way. I'm the living embodiment of truth. I am the life. You know, life. I am life. There is only life. There is no death. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Okay.
And perhaps versus the Pharisees or the existing religious leaders of the time.
It just had to do, when you're saying I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and I have something like this in that new book that's coming out that explains it much more in depth. Basically, that's what you find out, that I am that I am. I am truth, way, life. I am that I am, Sat Chit Anand. Truth, consciousness, bliss, life. I am that I am. I am the way. I am truth. I am. Everyone has that I am within. Everyone has that seed within. Okay. Get rid of the shadows and that's what remains.
Could you talk a little about where... they talk about the kingdom of heaven, and he says it's inside of men and outside of men, and it will not come by expectation, as the expectation how we lose our power to be in heaven.
Yeah, kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's here. It's now. It's not something you're trying to earn later. Absolutely, it's a state of consciousness. Okay. I'm in heaven now. I used to be in hell. Okay? I went from hell to heaven. Okay? You start out in hell. suffering, desire, aversion, that's hell. Okay? Heaven is when you enter that peace that passes all understanding. It's an internal. It's an internal. And when you're in that internally, it doesn't matter what's happening externally. You're not going to be buffeted for long. It'll be like a small wave that comes, and it's there for a time, and then it settles into that peace again. But that peace is always underlying that.
So is that like when it says we have to become like little children to enter into heaven, then the expectation, like little kids don't have expectations so much as like when we get to be adults and we expect we just take what is, so to speak.
Little kids are surrendered. They just trust. They're in play. They're not trying to put forward anything. Okay? They're open. They're transparent. They're honest. They are what they are. That's it. That's what he means. You become as children. So I said a guru is easy to deceive because we're in one way like children. I'm very open. Very open, very honest. I have nothing to hide. Some people say you should think about what you say before and you have to weigh the consequences, weigh this and that, but I can't do that. I don't operate that way. There's no longer an identity that's sitting there trying to calculate this or calculate that. It doesn't work that way. There's only flow. There's no mind that's caught up in any of that external type of thing, or what is somebody going to think, or what are they going to, you know, judge, or what is, you know, that doesn't arise anymore. The world is going to judge, the world is going to do what it's going to do. That has nothing to do with me. So, moving on. Oh, okay. Who is in the one-half color photo next to me, and what does it mean? Okay. This is called Artanarishvara. Artanarishvara is, if you see, half of the image is Shiva, half of the image is Shakti, and it's one. It's not two. Shiva always represents that absolute or the still point, and Shakti is the motion. It's one. Shiva, Shakti are one. Everyone contains this, and they are one. The realized being has realized this. It's just one. So that's what this is. This is called Artanarishvara. Do you have anything else? Any other question on that?
I just noticed, like, in your picture, like, if you would take a picture, a photograph of yourself, one side of the face is slightly different than the other. Is that, like, that have anything to do with that? Because one side of the face is a little bit different than the other.
Yeah. People, you say they have a kind of like a male and a female side, or one side is more logic and the other side is the more expanded, the one that's not logic. Everyone has a little bit difference, variance between one side of their face and the other. But yeah. Shiv Shakti. Whether it's motion or it's still, it doesn't matter. It's one. And this is another thing you enter when you get to realization. You're constantly aware of when there's sound, there's also silence. And you're aware of it equally. It's not either sound or silence. You're in that zero point balance where there's awareness. And it's not separate. It's a paradox, it is. When there's action, there's also inaction, point of stillness. So you enter into a totally different consciousness. you become a living dynamic of the Ardhanarishvara. It's why my online site for people that have taken Diksha is Ardhanarishvara Ashram. Hopefully all of you will reach realization, because there's really nothing to be reached. It's just letting go of the things that are covering it over. You are this naturally. But now you've covered so many things over that it feels like there is a separation. That's all. Transition from witness to self-inquiry. So when people, are you asking how to make the transition, or what is the transition, or what?
Well, when I've been meditating lately, for a while it was really blissful, and lately it's become harder, and I have like I had a bubble on the tire on my car, and so I was going to change my tires out, and I was meditating in the morning, and while I was meditating, it kept coming into my head how I was going to do it, when I was going to do it, what I was going to do. And I got so fed up and frustrated with the thought coming back, I finally questioned, who is asking these questions? Why am I asking these questions? Why do I need to ask this question? I'm going to finish meditating, and it's going to figure itself out on its own, so why am I sitting here thinking about this? So I kind of, is this the beginning of some self-inquiry from witness, or?
Okay. When I speak of the entering from witness into self-inquiry, within witness, you're just seeing these things and you're just more in the moment of now. When self-inquiry starts to arise, you start to have a, like, it's who is asking this? What is holding this in place? There's a shift that takes place where then you start to question, where is this coming from? What is this I? Everything you find revolves around this I want, I desire, I need. Eventually that clicks in and you come to point blank seeing it. So what is this I that's holding all of this in place? Is this I the mind? Is it emotion? Is it thought? For me, it was coming to a point of questioning, what is this mind? What is emotion? What are these things that I've thought have are this I? Am I this body? If I take away this finger, am I still I? If I take away a hand, is it still an I? If I take away the legs, is it still an I? What are thoughts? What is mind? Mind is nothing but thoughts. Thoughts come and go. So where is mind? Emotions. They come and go. If it comes and goes, it can't be the eternal I. It can't be the eternal is. It's transient. It comes and goes. So you just, it's a shift from watching things and just watching it like a movie into starting to question at a very, very, very deep level. And I'm not talking about surface questioning where you go, you know, okay, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, blah, blah, blah. You know, now I'm talking about it becomes very, very deep questioning. People, you know, it was like Ramana would say, well, who am I, who am I? But if people say who, here in this culture, when they ask that question, then they want to go to, you know, things that they're doing or other things rather than what is this I and what is holding it in place. So in my own life, it was questioning more, what is this I? Netty, netty, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. A process of elimination. Looking at it very deeply until it clicked that it's not this. And it will be a perceptible click that happens. For me, it was I was questioning very deeply. And I was visiting my guru's place. He was out of the country, and I stayed in his place for one night and was laying in the bed, and all of a sudden I sat bolt upright and knew I was not the body, not the mind, not the emotions. It was like a light switch being thrown. And in that moment, it was feeling like the Bible says that you're born again and you're pure, and I knew I was just pure spirit. I am not any of those things. It was not realization yet. There was still further to go, but it was a perceptual, a clear point that I was none of those things. It was a freeing up. So yeah, it's witness into self-inquiry. You'll be going along, and witnessing will allow you to start seeing patterns coming up and coming up and coming up to where you become aware of it. And then you become aware that what's holding it in place is this I want, I need, I desire, you know, an aversion to. It all stems around me. Okay, then what is this me that's holding it in place? And one starts to, at that point, go into a new cycle of questioning.
I'm aware at times. I have days when I meditate, and it's what Carl was describing. And I'm aware that my mind is just freaking out. It's afraid of losing control.
Absolutely. This comes in the beginning. When you start to meditate, you become more aware of the mind and the thoughts at first, and it stirs up the mud. All these things that you've held and collected are going to start coming up to be seen. So one just perseveres through it, and rather than looking at the content, just continue on with the mantra or the meditation. This is why it's given the focal point. So let this stuff just go and discharge, and don't be chasing it. Because if you start chasing it, what happens? Then you get drawn into an emotion, and that creates more thought and more emotion, and it starts feeling even more solid. And you just get pulled back out into another whirlpool. So this is why we give you the mantra to do, or we give you no other things to do. So you just continue on, and you do what's been given. You keep that point of focus. And eventually, if you're not paying attention to it, it'll go away. Like anything, if you're not feeding and giving it energy, it's going to dissipate.
I hope I'm not talking too much this morning. Another thing that what I'm really struggling with right now is I'm having a hard time fitting an hour of meditation into my life. And I feel like all these things keep coming up. And for a while, I was getting really upset about it. And then I thought, well, that's really stupid. Getting really upset about not finding time to meditate really isn't the point. So now I've just kind of decided just to kind of be in flow. And if I don't find it, then I don't freak out about it. And I just keep having the intention that I'm going to meditate for an hour a day. And
yeah, go to bed an hour earlier and set your clock an hour earlier.
My challenge with that is that I'm sick, and I find that if I really need to let my body sleep as much as it needs to sleep, and so I've had a flare-up going on.
Once again, that's an excuse. Go to bed earlier and set your alarm clock an hour earlier to get up. Because the more you relax into meditation, the more your body flare-ups are going to quit.
Okay, I'll try it.
Yeah, try that.
Okay.
Try that.
Thank you.
Yeah, everybody always has a reason why they can't. And everybody's reason why they can't seems valid at the time. And when you're ill, yes, you have to get enough rest. But if you're not getting enough rest, you're not going to bed early enough. Go to bed earlier. Make sure you have 8 hours of time to sleep, or 9 hours, or however much you need, 10 hours. It doesn't matter, but get yourself to bed earlier and give yourself that time. And then when you know your day what time you have to begin your day. If you have a set time, get up an hour earlier. So go to bed earlier. I suggest anyone on this path don't go to bed any later than 10 o'clock in the evening. Make sure you get enough rest. Very important to get enough rest. Don't be burning the candle at both ends and then wonder why you're exhausted. So onwards we go. And the last question in the satsang bowl. Can you talk about emptiness? Sure, I can.
I was thinking about that question too, because it's a big one in Buddhism. They talk about emptiness, and they really think emptiness is empty, and that nothingness is nothing. But from listening to you, it's far from being empty or nothing in the conventional sense.
Yeah, people, and I've spoke about this before, people have, they hear the word that it's empty, things are empty in nature. And then they think it's like without value, or, you know, that it's meaningless. So why, you know, why to do it? But that's not what we're speaking of. When we speak of things being empty in nature, we mean that simply it has not the substance that you think that it has. It's not this solid thing. It's empty in nature. And then when we speak of emptiness or the void, they think it's without any type of content. Well, it is. It doesn't have any type of a substance that you see, concrete substance like this, but it's more full than anything you can imagine. This is a paradox of mind. This is why you cannot get there by mind. You cannot get there by intellect. It's direct experience. It's empty in nature, but it's full. It's whole. It's complete. It's like, this is why I term it the pregnant void rather than just the void. The pregnant, it's infinite potential. It's the fullness of life. Anything that can come into life has to come from this seed state. It's absolutely whole, pristine, complete as it is. But yet it doesn't have some substance. It's not a persona. It's not a, you know, it's formless. Without boundaries.
When you actually had your awakening then, you said that it was all the stuff that you had suppressed into your unconscious mind from this life and from all your lives. And the reason why you suppressed it all in the first place was out of fear, because it was either a shock or something that didn't agree with you or painful or whatever. And so when all this stuff comes up, you can let go of it because it's like a second time. You're not so shocked by it and you're free of it. And I guess my question is, how does that directly relate to the enlightenment portion?
Because you have to eventually stop and look at these things point blank for them to be let go of. It's part of the path on the way to realization. Then when all of a sudden there's a transcendence and you face that last great fear of death and you consciously walk into it, knowingly surrender and walk through it, you find out that it didn't exist. It's a mirage. Death is a figment of the imagination. There is no death. All these fears that we've had are figments of our imagination. They're mirages. They're shadows. They really don't have a lot of substance. The worst thing we fear is death. And that's only a loss of the physical vehicle. That's all. You're not losing anything else. There is no death. Consciousness goes on. Life goes on. It's just another dimension. Subtle body goes on. Light body goes on. People want to work to develop a light body so they can take with them. That's all that remains. When the physical form goes, there's the light body. Okay?
So when you pass on and when you become enlightened, there's still something that's separate from the all that is.
No. Nothing can be separate from the all that is. If it was separate, it would have no life, no existence.
Well, I don't mean that. I mean, it's not just like all merged into one big... Like, now we see a body, so we know that there's a you and there's a you. But there's still a sense of individual.
It's like a diamond, many facets. But it's one. There's only one essence. Only one diamond can have many facets. Doesn't mean that they're separate. There is no separation.
So the physical body doesn't really make any difference.
Doesn't matter. That's why gurus, that's why sages don't care. So physical form falls away, it falls away. Doesn't matter if I'm embodied or not. I don't care. There's no struggle, no strain to hang on to a physical form. Gurus just go, they go, okay. Don't care. There is no death. What is there to struggle against?
So in death, all that happens is the physical body drops away.
That's it. That's it. It drops away. On to the next adventure. Every moment is a new adventure. What's the difference?
What about when you lose a parent or a loved one? You know, I think there's this sense that they're still around you.
Yeah. Absolutely. They can still come around. They drop in. They're at a higher vibration. They're not contained in the physical form. So they can be there. They can be there and look in. Doesn't matter.
What happens in the case of suicide?
Depends. Depends on what's their consciousness.
Probably pretty just kind of a normal kind of average human being.
Yeah, it just depends on what is their consciousness. If they're just in a lot of pain and they commit suicide just to get out of the pain, doesn't necessarily mean that they're in a lot of turmoil within themselves. Now, that's a different thing than somebody that's just in a lot of really major, major turmoil and just, you know, in total depression, total, you know, there's different levels, layers.
That's where my father was when he killed himself.
Yeah. In what?
Depression, turmoil. I think he just lost. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it just depends. They get to the other side and they get a chance to review and see what, you know, what it was. So depending, it depends. It's all individual. On whether they snap out of it right away or they don't. It's individual. You have to look at the overall consciousness where they're at. Versus it could be a one-time thing or something that's just, you know, but their overall is something different. You just, It depends. It depends.
My entire childhood, I had this feeling like he was around me, and he always wanted me to prove that he didn't commit suicide. And my mother, when I was about 18 or 19, finally sat me down, and she and his my entire family denied that he committed suicide. And my mother finally sat me down at 19, and she said, he committed suicide. I mean, he was going through deep depression. I mean, he committed suicide. And at that moment, the nightmares and the dreams stopped.
Yeah.
But I feel like you, and I told him at that point, I said, go away. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And he hasn't come back.
Yeah. That's possible. Absolutely. It was confronted and it was laid bare. That's all. Yeah, okay. He committed suicide. Okay. That was the reality.
So it's not like some, you're not sounding like it's some horrible, you're condemned to hell for eternity.
No. You might be in hell in your own consciousness for some time. But there's always opportunity to move out of that. There are people sometime, you know, on the other side that can come and kind of try to work with people. Same thing, you know, it's like Christ said when Christ, you know, died, he was in the tomb for 3 days. Where did he go? He went to the hell realms. Hell realms couldn't hold him, had no hold on him. His consciousness was not there. So he was able to go and talk with those people and try to free them from their own things that were keeping them bound. Same thing. The only bondage is there is the one that you're putting there. It's not the universe, it's not God is condemning you to hell. It's your own consciousness that is putting you there. So sages and gurus will go and try to, you know, continue to awaken you, try to get you out of that consciousness, to start to confront it, to start to let go of it.
Do I have any obligation to him?
No. Why?
I have this huge feeling that I do. No. I have since I was 3 years old.
Yeah, no. No. He made his karma. He made his bed. You didn't make that. So no, let go of that. Let go of that. You didn't have anything to do with his passing or his decisions. And a lot of times we want to take those things on, but we cannot carry somebody else's things. They have to be willing to step out of it. They put it into place. They have to be willing to step out of it. The one that's holding it in place is themselves. They need to step out of it. And there are others that can work with them. So you let go of it.
I think that's the hardest thing about suicide. It's the hell that keeps on giving. It's something that hangs over a family and never goes away. There's always that deep feeling like, you know.
Oh, we should have saved him. We should have done something different. We should have seen it. We should have.
Yeah.
No.
Awful.
No. You're accountable for your journey. But you cannot force someone else to be any different. You can't. Same thing. I can be a guru and I can see somebody in infinite suffering and want to help them, but I can't do anything for them. They have to want to let go of it. They have free will. Even Christ couldn't save everyone. They had free will. The ones that came to him for healing, he would heal. But the other ones, he didn't. He didn't go around, you know, butting in and say, I'm going to heal you whether you want it or not. No, it didn't happen. Why? Because they have free will. Let the dead bury the dead. It wasn't, come on, let's go charge in there and save them all. He didn't say that. Let the dead bury the dead. You come follow me. You're searching for life. You're ready to get out of it. You come. They're not ready to.
Could you talk a little bit about that pleasure and pain are basically the same thing, but suffering comes when you sort of have fear of pain?
Suffering is when you're hanging on to a mental dynamic concerning pain. Pain is pain, that's all. Okay? But pleasure and pain are not the same thing. Unless you happen to be a masochist and have confused the two.
Then
maybe for them, you know, pain is pleasure because they've confused the issue.
Because I've heard, like, you know, people say just be with your pain and accept it. And
there's a difference between accepting what's there and relishing in it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so avoidance
of pain.
You accept
the pain and you see it for what it is.
Okay, so denial is the problem then. Don't go into denial.
You're not going to sit there, and denial is not going to make it go away. This is what most people are in denial. And they're not stopping to look at it. This is why I said you come to a point where you have to stop and look at it point blank. You come to a point where you can't run away from it anymore. You can't cover it over. You cannot justify it. You have to first see you're in pain, and you have to admit to it, and you have to look at it point blank, and then question what is holding it in place. Where has it come from?
Okay. So you're going through little tiny enlightenments every day, basically.
No, they're not tiny enlightenments. Maybe tiny revelations.
Okay.
Enlightenment means basically it's blown out. There's no more. It's end. It's finished.
Well, I mean, say someone who has a mental problem, and then whatever surface and that portion of the problem can be let go of. That's like a tiny enlightenment?
No, it's not a tiny enlightenment. You're having changes along the way that happen. Yeah, you start to free up a little here, free up a little there, but it's not a tiny enlightenment.
And there has to come a point where you get the big, the heavy-duty one like you had.
It's blown out. Enlightenment, realization, nirvana, it's blown out.
And that
there's nothing else remains there. It's like becoming a hollow tube. There's nothing left in there. There's no content left in there.
And the main part of that is the fear of death.
That's a big one.
Okay.
People that go into these control and things, they fear loss of control. They fear loss of death. Yeah. Anytime you have where you're feeling loss of control, it's once again that same thing. You go into the sphere episode.
And the little revelations along the way serve to build up your courage and so forth to go the rest of the way. Is that true?
It can. It can give some relief along the way. Can cause you to dig deeper, but you have to finally start to see things and confront them. This is why you go into witness state, where you can start to see it with, because if you're so caught up in it, you're not seeing it for what it is. If you're in witness state, you kind of step back. You step back one, and then you're able to visually see what's happening. And to be able to come to a point of seeing that it's a pattern that's ongoing over and over and over again. That it's self-destructive, it's not doing you any good, and eventually you get sick and tired of it, and then you stop and confront it. And if you can get to the root of it, then you can cut that, and it's not going to be binding you and choking you any longer.
This might seem like a silly question, but is it because as you have more and more lifetimes, the stuff just builds up and builds up and builds up until you can't go on, and then finally say you gotta discharge it. Because someone like in their first incarnation or whatever, they haven't had a lot of stuff maybe built up.
Yeah, you keep collecting more. In this lifetime, the older you get, the more you collect. Until you finally have had enough and you start to let go of it. You see that it's self-defeating. You're not getting anywhere. No, even people that, you know, have a measure of success in this world, they come to a point to see their success is not making them happy. Even somebody that gains everything they thought they needed, and then they get to that point, and then they find out, they become disillusioned. They find out, oh, I thought if I had this, if I had that, if I had the other, then I would be happy. And they get to that point and find out, no. Then they start confronting, they start looking. So it can either come out of pain or it can come out of disillusionment. You know, that you begin, there are a lot of different ways and means that you begin this search. But it all comes out of eventually you reach a point where enough is enough and you stop and then you start to take stock. Start to let go. Start to go with the flow. Let go and go with the flow, and then start looking at your own involvement and what you've held in place and the pain you put yourself through. Or the things you've believed that other people have told you, run your life around and once again cause yourself pain and hardship where it doesn't need to be there. But yeah, eventually you come to a point where you start to question. Then you enter a spiritual path and you start looking. Some people, though, they enter the spiritual path with another way and means to cover up. But eventually they'll find out that doesn't work and they'll come to a point where they have to stop and take stock and then start confronting things. So that's the end of our satsang questions for the day. I wanted to thank people. Jyoti Das, thank you very much for doing all the seva you've been doing. And now that it's Christmas time, I would like to say I would like to see more people doing more seva in whatever avenue that they can do, what they can give to help this to go forward, to help others. We're growing. Eventually, I hope somebody comes forward that has a larger place that will, in fact, open up for seva, because I'm running out of room here. Simply, I just don't have enough room. Pretty soon we're going to outgrow this place, so we need to, hopefully we'll have somebody that will show up that will have some room that will help to open it up so we can have satsang and continue to grow, or find a way and means to put something in place where we can have more room one way or another, because we're outgrowing here. Well, an ashram would be nice, yeah. One way or another, it's got to come about. Eventually, we need to have more room and have a steady place where people could come. So I'm branching out and doing other things as well as just giving satsang. I'm working also with people that are in various, either coming out of drugs or coming out of anxiety problems or, you know, a lot of other things as well. So, yeah, need to have more space and more facilities. And whatever seva that people can offer is greatly appreciated. Everyone has different talents. Everyone can contribute in a different way. Oh, the status on the nonprofit. I spoke with Kubera the other day. He said it's going to run about $2,000 for the lawyer down in L.A. area to put it together. So he wasn't sure on all of this, you know, he's not sure how to put it together, and I thought 2,000 is an awful lot. Sounds like, you know, because I don't see this as being something really complicated one. So, so that's still, you know, it hasn't gone forward yet. Because this guy is a bank manager, but he doesn't know about incorporations. What to do. So. It needs to be, yeah, people are wanting to make donations. It needs to be deductible. And also because my income, I live off of my income from the government, and if I earn any money, it's gone. It's immediately gone. So we need to find some way to put this into motion. Also, I want, you know, it has to be listed as a religious organization because people are starting to take sannyas. Things are, you know, we need to start having things in motion so that this can grow in a correct way. So... yeah, it's come to the point where it has to be done. It has to. Yeah. So we'll see. So we'll go ahead and take a break now, and then we'll go ahead. If you want, we can watch the video on Muktananda. If you'd like to do that, or if you'd like to leave early today, being that it's, you know, I know it's the countdown is coming for Christmas and people haven't done all their shopping yet, and so so if you want to just, you know, go early today, that's fine. Or if you want to, no, it's Muktananda. I'm not familiar with him.
Okay. You mean the Kundalini guy?
Yeah, Yogi Bhajan.
Oh, Bhajan?
Bhajan, maybe. Yeah.
Yogi Bhajan? Didn't he just pass away?
He passed away.
He's the one that was doing the Sikh path where they're doing the Kundalini yoga and stuff.
Was he an enlightened being?
I couldn't say. I haven't met him. I think it's pretty irresponsible, though. I'll get myself in trouble here. Pretty irresponsible to be teaching Kundalini yoga without having any idea of what to do when it opens, without having in place teachers that when it opens, they know what to do with people.
He was describing it as something to do with the spinal fluid and the pituitary, and when that somehow...
It brings it into physiological things, but as the consciousness changes and these things change, the physiological functions change as well.
Because I got a yoga teacher, so. And she was saying that people make it harder than it is, and you do this breathing, and then you have enlightenment. And
no, you don't do the breathing, and then you have enlightenment. This is obviously somebody that doesn't know. They haven't gone through Kundalini. They have absolutely no idea. They have theories, and she's talking out of her butt. Excuse me. You know? I hate to say it that way, that crude, but that's the way it is.
you know, people that teach these yoga classes, and then they feel a little warmth, and they have, you know, they're living in la-la land. They haven't gone through the experience of Kundalini. They haven't gone through the journey of it. It's wonderful to have all these notions and theories, and this is the problem. This is a problem with people doing the Kundalini yoga and doing Reiki and doing these other things. They don't have the depth of it. They've been taught the surface things, the peripheral, the externals, but the internal of what it's supposed to be taking you towards, they don't have. And they're well-meaning in what they're saying, but they're in ignorance, unfortunately. This is like somebody in kindergarten that's trying to explain, you know, physics. You know? They don't know. So, yeah. It's sad. It makes me very sad to see things like this. You know, all of these practices, the Reiki, and these chi practices, yogic practices, and anyone that's doing the pranayama, any good guru that's doing pranayama will tell you, you never do pranayama unless you are in the physical presence of the guru that's teaching you.
Pranayama, what's that?
Pranayama, these breathing methods, because you have to know what you're doing. They can be very dangerous if you're not doing it in a correct manner. Same thing as Kundalini. They say, do not awaken it, do not attempt to awaken it unless you have a guru in place. Because it's dangerous. It can lead to death, it can lead to madness. They're not joking. You need to know what you're doing. But now these things are being given out on every street corner. So people are starting to awaken in a process that they have no idea what they're doing. This is why so many people are winding up in mental hospitals now. They're becoming extremely unbalanced because they don't know the process. They don't know what's coming up. And they start freaking out.
I had an experience because I was thinking along the lines of enlightenment and doing everything myself, you know, and everything. I was driving along in my car, and all of a sudden all this blackness came up from my legs and came up. And next thing I knew, I was like, woke up, and I was going down the freeway 55 miles an hour.
And out.
Uh-huh. I don't know if that, because I tried to do it on my own without a guru or what. I don't know what that was.
A lot of things can happen, you know, a lot of things. You really need to be under the guidance. You really do. Because, yeah, you can go out, you can lose consciousness, you can, you know, what I mean, a lot of perceptual changes are going to happen. Mm-hmm. A lot of things happen along the way. This is why, you know, it needs to be ashrams in place where when people are going through the difficult part of it, they have a place that they can come if something needs to be managed and looked after for a time. So, yeah. All of these things are an opportunity for realization if it's done in the right way. People have a false concept that if you awaken Kundalini, you're automatically going to get realization. If you see light, you're enlightened. It's not the case. So, yeah. People need to... Here it is, the information age. They need to have more information. Because people can get in over their heads. They think that they're just taking, you know, it's just, you know, a universal energy or something. But it starts working in the depths of the consciousness and starts moving things forward, so they have to understand what that is and what it entails to do this journey and what it is that they're really getting involved with. Because it's not just light exercise all the time. It's not just, you know, these things are put into place to awaken these, to awaken this, to take one on this journey. So I wish that they would become more forthcoming or more knowledgeable within these different modalities of doing the yogas, the pranayams, the Reiki, the energy work, Qigong, Tai Chi, any of these things that are working to build energy and to do that can potentially unlock this process. So I hope that more and more teachers become available eventually, more and more people transcend and continue to go forward and help the rest of humanity, because a lot of people, like I said, are winding up inadvertently into a process that they didn't know and a journey they didn't know that they were going to take. So we don't want to see a lot of casualties along the way. So thank you for coming, and we'll take a quick break, and then we'll take a group vote and see if you want to watch the video or do meditation or just be dismissed for the day. Namaste.